Just continuing with another sutta that's an introduction to the Kanda section on the Dhammanupassana, these five aggregates. This is Majjhima Nikaya Sutta number 64. The Mahamalankya Sutta. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati in Jetas Grove, Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, do you remember the five lower fetters as taught by me?" When this was said, the Venerable Malankyaputta replied, "Venerable Sir, I remember the five lower fetters as taught by the Blessed One." "But, Malankyaputta, in what way do you remember the five lower fetters as taught by me?" "Venerable Sir, I remember identity view as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember doubt as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember adherence to rules and observances as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember sensual desire as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember ill will as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. It is in this way, Venerable Sir, that I remember the five lower fetters as taught by the Blessed One." "Malankyaputta, to whom do you remember my having taught these five lower fetters in that way? Would not the wanderers of other sects confute you with the simile of the infant? For a young, tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion identity, so how could identity view arise in him? Yet the underlying tendency to identity view lies within him. A young, tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion teachings, so how could doubt about the teachings arise in him? Yet the underlying tendency to doubt lies within him. A young, tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion rules, so how could adherence to rules and observances arise in him? Yet the underlying tendency to adhere to rules and observances lies within him. A young, tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion sensual pleasures, so how could sensual desire arise in him? Yet the underlying tendency to sensual lust lies within him. A young, tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion beings, so how could ill will toward beings arise in him? Yet the underlying tendency to ill will lies within him. Would not the wanderers of other sects confute you with the simile of the infant?" Thereupon the Venerable Ananda said, "It is the time, Blessed One, it is the time, Sublime One, for the Blessed One to teach the five lower fetters. Having heard it from the Blessed One, the bhikkhus will remember it. Then listen, Ananda, and attend closely to what I shall say." "Yes, Venerable Sir," the Venerable Ananda replied. The Blessed One said this, "Hear, Ananda, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, abides with a mind obsessed and enslaved by identity view, and he does not understand, as it actually is, the escape from the arisen identity view, and when that identity view has become habitual and is uneradicated in him, it is a lower fetter. He abides with a mind obsessed and enslaved by doubt, by adherence to rules and observances, by sensual lust, by ill will, and he does not understand as it actually is the escape from arisen ill will. And when that ill will has become habitual and is uneradicated in him, it is a lower fetter. A well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, does not abide with a mind obsessed and enslaved by identity view. He understands as it actually is the escape from the arisen identity view, and identity view, together with the underlying tendency to it, is abandoned in him. He does not abide with a mind obsessed and enslaved by doubt, by adherence to rules and observances, by sensual lust, by ill will. He understands as it actually is the escape from the arisen ill will, and ill will, together with the underlying tendency to it, is abandoned in him. There is a path, Ananda, a way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, that anyone, without relying on that path, on that way, shall know or see or abandon the five lower fetters. That is not possible. Just as when there is a great tree standing possessed of heartwood, it is not possible that anyone shall cut out its heartwood without cutting through its bark and sapwood too. So too, there is a path, a way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, that any that anyone, without relying on that path, on that way, shall know or see or abandon the five lower fetters. That is not possible. There is a path, Ananda, a way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, that someone, by relying on that path, on that way, shall know and see and abandon the five lower fetters. This is possible. Just as, when there is a great tree standing possessed of heartwood, it is possible that someone shall cut out its heartwood by cutting through its bark and sapwood, so too there is a path to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. This is possible. Suppose, Ananda, the river Ganges were full of water right up to the brim so that cows could drink from it. And then a feeble man came thinking, by swimming across the stream with my arms, I shall get safely across to the further shore of this river Ganges. Yet he would not be able to get safely across. So too, when the Dhamma is being taught to someone for the cessation of personality, if his mind does not enter into it and acquire confidence, steadiness, and resolution, then he can be regarded as like the feeble man. Suppose, Ananda, the river Ganges were full of water right up to the brim so that crows could drink from it. And then a strong man came thinking, by swimming across the stream with my arms, I shall get safely across to this further shore of this river Ganges. And he would be able to get safely across. So too, when the Dhamma is being taught to someone for the cessation of personality, if his mind enters into it and acquires confidence, steadiness, and resolution, then he can be regarded as like the strong man. And what, Ananda, is the path, the way leading to the abandoning of the five lower fetters? Here, with seclusion from the acquisitions, I'll clarify that right now. That's the upadhi viveka. So seclusion from the acquisitions, from upadhi. Here with seclusion from the acquisitions, with the abandoning of unwholesome states, with the complete tranquilization of bodily inertia, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. Whatever exists therein of material form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a barb, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as void, as not self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it towards the deathless element thus. This is the peaceful. This is the sublime, that is, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all attachments, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. If he is steady in that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, then with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. Again, with the stilling of applied and sustained thought, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the second jhana. Again, with the fading away as well of rapture, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the third jhana. Again, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the fourth jhana, which is neither pain nor pleasure and purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. Whatever exists therein of material form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as not self. And of course, it goes through all of that. Impermanent as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a barb, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as void, as not self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element thus. This is the peaceful, this is the sublime, that is the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all attachments, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. If he is steady in that, he attains the destruction of the taints. If he does not attain the destruction of the taints, because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, then with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. Again, with the complete surmounting of perceptions of form, with the disappearance of perceptions of sensory impact, with non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of infinite space. Whatever exists therein of feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, and so on. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element. This is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. Again, by completely surmounting the base of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of infinite consciousness. Whatever exists therein of feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as not self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it towards a deathless element. This is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. Again, by completely surmounting the base of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of nothingness. Whatever exists therein of feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a barb, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as void, as not self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it towards the deathless element thus. This is the peaceful, this is the sublime, that is the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all attachments, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. If he is steady in that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, then with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. Venerable Sir, if this is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, then how is it that some bhikkhus here are said to gain deliverance of mind and some are said to gain deliverance by wisdom? That's Jeta Vimutti and Panya Vimutti. The difference here, Ananda, is in their faculties, I say. This is what the Blessed One said. The Venerable Ananda was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So when that reference to faculties, it means that in terms of inclination and what people have cultivated, so that the commentary says, among those who proceed by way of serenity, one bhikkhu emphasizes unification of mind. He is said to gain deliverance of mind. Another emphasizes wisdom. He is said to gain deliverance by wisdom. Among those who proceed by way of insight, One emphasizes wisdom, he is said to gain deliverance by wisdom. Another emphasizes unification of mind, said to gain deliverance of mind. The two chief disciples attained arahantship by emphasizing both serenity and insight, but Venerable Sariputta became one who gained deliverance by wisdom, and Venerable Mahamoggallana became one who gained deliverance of mind. Thus the reason for the different designations is the difference in their faculties, between the predominance of the concentration faculty and of the wisdom faculty. I'll read the footnotes on this so that in the beginning, the sutta, the Buddha is asking who remembers what the five lower fetters are, basically, as taught by me. And five lower fetters are so-called because they lead to rebirth in the sense sphere planes. They are eradicated in their entirety only by the non-returner, the anagami. Malankya Putta answers, and by all seemingly straightforward answer, it seemed like it'd be a decent answer, and then the Buddha criticizes him. So then the commentary says, the question may be raised. When the Buddha had asked about the fetters, and the elder replied in terms of the fetters, why does the Buddha criticize his reply? The reason is that Malankyaputta held the view that a person is fettered by the defilements only at times when they assail him, while at other times he is not fettered by them. The Buddha spoke as he did to show the error in this view. I think he was just giving Malankyaputta a bad time, or more than anything. So then the Buddha goes on to one criticism. Then, would not the wanderers of other sects confute you with a simile of the infant? For a young, tender infant, lying prone, does not even have the notion identity. So how could identity view arise in him? So using that, yet the underlying tendency to identity view lies within him. So there's the same with teachings.
When you were reading, it sounded like you went the reading of a self view and then you went to ill will. Did it go through all five of the factors?
Yeah.
You just condensed it. So
I read through it.
Yeah.
And then at first, and then at the end, and goes through identity view by doubt, by rules and observances, by sensual lust, by ill will.
Do you hear from time to time like Zen teachings or New Age kind of teachings, like getting back to your purity as if you were an infant, your childlike purity?
Right.
So that's interesting, like talking about the underlying tendencies.
Yes, I mean obviously people who use that image have never really seen a baby. it's just some conceptualized idea about what a baby should be.
Like the child's mind.
Yeah. Well, the child, yeah. Boy, that's nothing to wish on anybody.
Jeff has a few articles out really slamming that name.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that the anusaya are like underlying tendencies in the sense that they have not been abandoned in the mental continuum to which they belong, and because they are capable of arising when a suitable cause presents itself. In the commentaries, the defilements are distinguished as occurring at three levels. The anusaya level, where they remain as mere latent dispositions in the mind. The Parliyutana level, where they rise up to obsess and enslave the mind. And the Vittikamma level, where they motivate unwholesome bodily and verbal action. The point of the Buddha's criticism is that the fetters, even when they do not come to active manifestation, continue to exist at the anusaya level so long as they have not been eradicated by the supramundane path. And then the next footnote is on the talking about the well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones, skilled in discipline, their Dhamma, does not abide with a mind obsessed and enslaved by identity view. He understands as it actually is the escape from the arisen identity view and identity view together with the underlying tendency to it is abandoned in him. 53. So the fetter and the underlying tendency are in principle not distinct things. Rather, it is the same defilement that is called a fetter in the sense of binding and an underlying tendency in the sense of being unabandoned. There it is. And then in the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, here with seclusion from the acquisitions, so the upadhi viveka, upadhi is the commentary glosses upadhi here as the five cords of sensual pleasure, though the first three clauses of this statement seem to express the same ideas as the two blah 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 blah. So that normally upadhi is referring actually to the five khandhas, the attachment to the five khandhas, the basis for being, is usually what upadhi is referring to. With this as that seclusion, and it's usually, you know, the mind is very, very, really grounded in relinquishment. So that at that point, with the abandoning of this is the lead up to the first jhana, so that it's not just a state of stillness with just the abandoning of the five hindrances, but there's also this attachment to the five khandhas or in abeyance. And then, of course, the contemplation of that recognition of the whatever exists there in a material form, feeling, perception, formations, consciousness, the impermanent suffering as a disease, a tumor, a barb, calamity and affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as void, as not self. It's probably the most descriptive kind of exposition on anicca, dukkha, anatta. Mm-hmm. Not just a philosophical statement. This is something to be relinquished. It's worthy of note that because sometimes there's the doctrine of belief that the jhanas are sometimes an obstacle to insight contemplation, but this is an obvious recognition of how that works even within states of consciousness, and that the states of subtle consciousness, and that this first jhana being the basis of the insight, and reflecting on whatever exists therein of material form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, that is the basis of that insight. So that first jhana is your base, and same with second, third, and fourth. And then it's interesting that after the with then the shift into the immaterial attainments with the complete surmounting perceptions of form, disappearance of perception, sensory impact, non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite. Then Bhikkhu enters upon, abides in that infinite base of infinite space. And whatever exists therein, a feeling, perception, formation, consciousness, it's interesting that body, there is not a base of contemplation or insight, because body is not perceptive. It's not, one's not perceiving body. One's a purely mental concentration. Yeah.
Like originally, I was going to ask about that. Does that imply that insight is realized during that absorption? Or
exactly. That's why I'm sort of saying the insight seems to be at that time, rather than one comes out of concentration and then goes back so that to me, there's more going on in concentration that some teachers tend to emphasize. But it is also interesting that there is no reference to the concentration of the eighth formless attainment, the base of neither perception nor non-perception. That's considered too refined to be able to distinguish the characteristics that are suitable for insight. It's purely a concentration attainment.
In the two of Samhita, the short discourse on
Chula Maham. Chula Samhita.
Didn't you say in there that like when you get to those sort of formless, there's still the awareness of the body?
Yes, it's a big book. Huh?
There's something about how there's still their body.
In the
formless
attainments? I don't know. I'd have to go back and read it carefully. And I think it would be... I don't think I could just sort of flip the book open and find it.
Bhikkhu Bodhi comments on what you just said in the numerical discourses, although he said the opposite. Because there's something in the numerical discourses where it's reporting that somebody was doing walking meditations in the first jhana, and he said it was just sort of the way it was written rather than what it actually means. And he thought that one can't, that one doesn't have actually one certain thing during the jhana. So it's purely in state and reflection. That just his interpretation.
Yes, so there's lots of interpretations.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to practice.